From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today On Deadline is breaking down the latest development in the war between Russia and Ukraine, North Korea entering the fray, leading to new possibilities and concerns about the war expanding. In a speech from mid-October, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that the war had shifted, and he revealed that North Korean troops were part of the equation. While the Kremlin and North Korea first denied these claims, the U.S. has now confirmed that North Korean troops have been spotted in Russia, and they appear to be fighting alongside Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin's troops. This development comes as an unlikely relationship between Putin and North Korea's Kim Jong-un has continued to grow throughout the last year. Much of the world turned on Putin after Russia invaded Ukraine in February of 2022. As he searched for allies to help him with the invasion, now entering its third year, he befriended the North Korean leader. North Korea at first sent Russia munitions and weapons. But now things have escalated even further with the involvement of troops on the ground. According to audio captured by the Defense Intelligence of Ukraine from an encrypted Russian transmission channel, the North Korean troops have been stationed in Russia's Kursk region. Kursk is where Ukraine launched a surprise incursion earlier this year, creating another wrinkle in the war. Now, the Kremlin and Putin are no longer denying the deployment of North Korean troops, but they're not confirming it either. North Korea is also not confirming its involvement in the war, but the country did claim in state media that any deployment of troops to Russia would conform with international law. Don Jensen, a senior advisor at the U.S. Institute of Peace and former diplomat at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, joined Odyssey last week to give an update on North Korea and Russia's latest move.
If this is true, I mean, this is what do you make of the news now, especially given other countries' support of Russia's invasion?
Well, it's almost certainly true. The U.S. government has confirmed, and other, as they say, reliable sources have too. The Russians are just lying, not the first time. I think we don't know the numbers. I've seen 3,000. I've seen 11,000. We don't know the types of troops. I've seen special forces who are tough guys. But I think we can safely say that they're on their way. I saw one story that they're going by ship from Vladivostok in Russia. So we have to see. But certainly, or almost certainly, they're going to join. It's a significant development in the war, though it's unlikely to change the front one way or the other. But it broadens the war. It makes it more of a, in quotes, world war, and it's something of concern. But there are a lot of subplots here that have to play out as we digest this piece of news.
Okay, we'll get to the subplots in a minute, but tell me what you mean a little bit more, that you don't think it's going to change the outcome of the battle.
No, you know, Patty, the Russians lose 1,100 guys a day. So look at it this way. It's a week and a half worth of casualties. I hate to speak cold-blooded. You mentioned the number on your intro, and the Russians have lost hugely. If you read the media, there's a sense that Russia is pushing them back some quarters and eventually will win. They're certainly gaining a kilometer or two a day, but there's a long way between that and winning. And when you see this and other pieces of information on the Russian side, you see really, I think, a strong indication that Putin has his own manpower problem. He's sending criminals. He's sending Central Asians, lying to them. And now he's sending North Koreans. And he's sending some cannibals. I hate to say that, but some of these people are pretty grim characters. So the Russians are taking huge losses. The question that everybody argues about is what next? Negotiations? Or will Russia collapse? Or will Ukraine collapse? The momentum lately in a policy debate has been move somehow to negotiations, which I think personally is unlikely. But this is a sign that the Russians are suffering badly, too. They just are better at covering it.
Aside from these new developments this week, Russia is a nuclear state. North Korea has nuclear ambitions, as you know. So what does this mean if they're cooperating together? Is there a threat that nuclear program could be helped in North Korea by Russia?
Oh, there's certainly a threat. I think it's probably likely, because the North Koreans have to get something back. And what I expect they will get back is the higher technology Russian weapon systems, probably to help their nuclear program, which exists, although it's relatively primitive, but it's geared primarily toward South Koreans nearby. So that is what people are concerned about. And in turn, the South Koreans are likely to help the Ukrainians more vigorously. Right now, some of the South Korean assistance, which does get to Ukraine, goes to third parties like Norway and European partners. Now, I think the South Korean government, despite the political cost, is thinking about actually providing direct assistance to Ukraine. And certainly South Korean assistance, given their high state of readiness, their excellent military, their Western-type military production and weapons, that will really help the Ukrainians as well. So we have to see. The immediate issue is that North Korean troops going there, but this is now going to play out. And I would note, by the way, that the so-called BRICS conference took place in Russia this week. Again, a sign that Putin is leaning eastward, away from Europe, eastward to look for allies, eastward to challenge the U.S. diplomatically as well. So all of this is going on at once, not just on the battlefield in Ukraine, but in the diplomatic capitals of the world as once. So this is another ingredient in the mix to a war that now is threatening to expand.
Korean officials said this week that they may consider sending aid to Ukraine. South Korea also condemned North Korea for getting involved in the war in the first place. Yonhap, a South Korean news agency, said that Seoul is considering sending military personnel to Ukraine so it can monitor North Korea's presence in the conflict. CBS News military analyst Jeffrey McCausland joined Odyssey to give an update on South Korea's potential involvement last week.
So how should we interpret this? North Korea already sending troops to aid Russia. We don't know how they're going to be used yet, but intel troops going to Ukraine from South Korea. What should we think of this?
Well, I think a couple of ways. One, obviously, it's very clearly escalatory, and Secretary of Defense Austin has pointed that out in remarks where he announced that our intelligence suggests the North Koreans are in Russia right now training. Mr. Zelensky, President Zelensky of Ukraine, even said another country has entered this war, and that it consequently is escalatory. And now we see South Korea following suit, talking about sending perhaps intelligence troops to Ukraine to monitor the activities of North Koreans, perhaps interrogate prisoners, if there are some. But also the South Koreans are talking about providing more lethal assistance to Ukraine, in particular 155 artillery ammunition, which the Ukrainians desperately need. And South Korea is quite a player internationally in defense production. So one place is escalatory. Second of all, I think it actually shows us Mr. Putin may be having more problems than we ever imagined. And one is, of course, in case of manpower. We know they have recruited Cubans, Nepalese. We know they stripped a aircraft carrier of its crew and made them into infantry because they just don't have the manpower, as they lose about 1,200 casualties every single day. And so now perhaps Mr. Putin, in somewhat of a desperation, is turning to North Korea for manpower. And there's a belief by the Ukrainians, at least, that we'll see them appear in the Kursk region, where the Ukrainians have invaded and created a salient on Russian territory, and perhaps in the future, using those North Koreans on the ground, if they go into combat, to attempt to reverse that.
Should we worry about this broadening out the scope of the war?
Absolutely, without question, because one can imagine tensions on the Korean Peninsula have arisen over the last several months. North Korea changed its constitution at the direction of Kim Jong-un, and now has identified South Korea as their primary enemy. Heretofore, they talked about reunification in that document. They've blown up a couple of roads and a railway line that had been established way back many years ago as a sign of sort of efforts towards peace and reconciliation. They've made a point of destroying those. They've been saturating South Korea with these balloons full of trash. So tensions there have been rising. And now with the perhaps entry of North Korea into the conflict under this treaty of the mutual defense and cooperation signed by Putin and Kim Jong-un back in June, now we see South Korea as well being drawn in, and actually South Korean representatives meeting more closely with NATO officials to coordinate their actions.
No. So what does this mean for us? Well, with the upcoming election, a lot is on the table when it comes to how our next president will respond to these global conflicts. Will Vice President Harris or former President Trump be better suited to our allies and adversaries around the globe? Last month, journalist Bob Woodward released his latest book, which offered some commentary on former President Trump's relationship with President Putin. He wrote that that relationship has continued even since Trump left office, with several phone calls. While a Trump spokesperson denied that the stories in the book were factual, the Kremlin actually seemed to confirm that some of them were accurate. Now we have to wonder, does Russia have a preference about who wins the Oval Office? Brian Taylor, a political science professor at Syracuse University and an expert in Russian and comparative politics, joined Odyssey to lend some insight.
So let's take him at his word. Is it a good thing for someone who's not in the White House anymore to be having conversations with a foreign leader, especially one who doesn't seem to have the U.S.'s best interest at heart?
I would say not. And I would note that if he is having such conversations, he should be coordinating them with the current administration as part of some larger U.S. foreign policy strategy. But it's clear that that would not be the case here. And so it makes us wonder what exactly Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin might have been talking about in these seven phone calls. It's hard to imagine that Trump was trying to strengthen the Biden administration position against Russia that's waging this aggression against Ukraine at the moment.
So what would be the major concerns then, aside from lack of coordination?
Well, it's hard to know specifically because we don't know the content of the conversations, but we do know that Donald Trump has really never, ever said a bad word about Vladimir Putin, even when given the opportunity to do so. He seems to look up to him and admire him and seek to appease him. We know at the time these conversations were happening, at least part of this time, Mar-a-Lago was stuffed full of secret documents that Trump had taken away from the White House at the end of his presidency. So given his past history with Putin, I would be concerned about exactly what he was telling him about his plans for a subsequent administration or other conversations and interests that they might have continued from the time that Trump was president.
How has Putin managed to keep this war going that wasn't supposed to last more than a month and now is heading towards 3 years? It's got to be a massive drain on resources, manpower, all the above.
It's really a huge drain on resources. Russia has suffered more than 600,000 casualties over the last 2.5 years, including, according to U.S. estimates, over 115,000 dead. The economy is completely on a war footing with around 7% of GDP, maybe 8% or more, going to the military. Russia has been increasingly dependent on countries like Iran and North Korea for missiles and artillery. And it's really having a massive and horrible impact on Russia. But of course, the biggest impact is on Ukraine, which has been suffering bombing repeatedly every night, occupation, ethnic cleansing, deportation of children, rape and torture, as well as the killing of military and civilian personnel. So it's a great catastrophe, but Putin seems to be doubling down on trying to destroy and control Ukraine.
I'm curious how you view the sheer number of former national security officials, many of whom served in the Trump administration, who've come out opposing him.
Yeah, it's pretty unusual for so many former cabinet officials and other people who worked for a president to come out and openly oppose his presidency. But I think that reflects the fact that, you know, people who were working as his chief of staff or his national security advisor or his secretary of defense saw some very erratic and disturbing behavior, not only in terms of foreign policy choices, but also about the possibility, for example, of using the military internally against American citizens, which Trump talked about in 2020 and is talking about again now. So I think that reflects a pretty large bipartisan consensus in the security community that a second Trump presidency would raise real concerns about the future of U.S. foreign policy.
And looking at a Harris-Waltz team, do you think that the plans regarding Russia-Ukraine would stay pretty much on course with the Biden administration, how it's been going now?
So far, all we've seen from Vice President Harris and Governor Waltz are that they are strong supporters of Ukraine and are likely to continue such a policy. There is even some hope among Ukraine supporters in the U.S. that a Harris presidency might be even more supportive of Ukraine and allow it to do things like use U.S. longer-range strike weapons to hit, you know, military bases, air bases, ammo depots deeper into Russia to sort of bring the fight deeper into Russia. But Vice President Harris hasn't been very specific on that, other than taking the position that we must continue to stand up to Russia and support Ukraine in its war.
While Russian and North Korean leaders may be praising their countries for working together, the intercepted audio we touched on in our open shows that those on the ground don't feel the same. In the audio, several Russian troops can be heard criticizing their new allies, saying that they don't understand how or even why they're being used in an expletive-filled rant. With the election now just days away, the future of the war in Ukraine, the war in the Middle East, the war with prices, the war for reproductive rights, and the war with anything else you could name seem to be hanging on by a thread. But don't worry too much. Whatever happens, we here at On Deadline will stand ready to provide you with the details you need to know about the headlines that matter. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I'd like to thank you for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts to stay informed.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.